This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week, been a little bit of a long week, but it's been a good week. This is, because sometimes I forget to announce it, this is episode 255. Unbelievable. Next week is going to be a magic number, 256. Programmers always pay attention to powers of two. 256 next week. This week, 255. That means we are five away from 5 years. 5 years worth of podcasts. That's what happens when you don't know when to quit. And of course, I'm starting to think now about, what are we going to do for the 5 years of podcast? I think the best suggestion I've had so far is that my daughter said, well, we could all just pile in the car and we could do one all together. And I thought, yeah, that's not a bad suggestion. I thought I hadn't done one with her, but she was like year two or something like that. So I did do one with her. I'd forgotten that. It's been so many years. So good. It's good. Things are good. Things are good. Had some nice conversations with friends this week. You know, had conversation with some new friends this week. Yeah, good. And another buddy, he's getting through some of his schooling, so he and I may start having some conversations again, which is good. Always enjoy that. I this week actually got a ticket that I haven't paid yet because I'm waiting for it to get caught up in their online system so I can just go and pay it online. But, you know, that's okay. It's all right. You need to support the local sheriff's department a little bit. That's okay. The officer was a little bit apologetic that he was giving me a ticket for going through a stop sign. He was saying, you know, I mean, even if people do kind of a bump and go, I typically just get them a warning. But he said, you didn't even slow down. No, I didn't. Because I came to the intersection. I could see that particular intersection a long ways. And I was late for getting to go breakfast for a friend. And so I don't know if I was quite as concerned about this as he was, but that's okay. I will pay the ticket and go on my merry way. I was very pleasant. I was very pleasant and thanked him. And so, you know, it's good. But that's okay. The writing is going along fine. There's been a few little timing challenges, but it's going fine. You know, it'll be interesting to see how many pages I'm actually going to end up with, because I may need to find some things to thicken out a little bit. I'm really looking to land this thing at around 300 pages or so, and I'm over 100 pages now, and I don't know where we're at, but we'll just see. Like I said, I may need to thicken a few things out and put some little more descriptive information in, because it's a little sparse at this point. You can always make a book thicker by putting more descriptive information in, so I can do that. It's fun, though. It's fun. It's going along well. I'm pretty happy so far, and I really haven't even gotten through the editing pass yet, so it's going to be interesting. This is going to be interesting, you know, because there are a whole lot of books in this series, and I don't know if that guy's coming or not. A whole lot of books in this series, so fun stuff. What else? We are in transition now between my wife is finishing up at the Methodist Church, and then she's already started at the church where she and I got married, and our daughter grew up there, and so we're making the transition back to our home church. So that's fun. That's fun. You know, there's always plenty of people that still know us, and so plenty of people to talk to, and all that kind of thing. So it's nice. It's nice to be back there. And that's where our kids go. And so that's nice. You know, it's good. It's good. We like it. What else this week before we start talking about our topic? I think that's about it. As you might have guessed from last week, I am watching. I have finished Doctor Who Classic. I think I mentioned that. I've gotten through all of it, watched all of it. I can say I've done that now. And so now I'm working my way through Darren Brown's videos on YouTube, watching those. And so I found, you know, a lot of stuff that I find interesting on there. There was one episode that I'm going to talk about today that I almost didn't watch. But then I thought, no, I should watch this. And I watched it, and it was very interesting. And it's also very interesting in just looking at it from my interpretation of human thought mechanics. Obviously, Darren Brown is a very successful mentalist / magician. He does go out of his way to tell people over and over, I am not psychic, I have no special powers. Everything I do is a combination of showmanships, psychological techniques. What else does he put in there? Magic tricks and everything. All of his tricks, per se, are all mentalist-oriented. He's not trying to make girls disappear from boxes or anything like that. He doesn't do anything like that. But when you begin to deconstruct and when you begin to realize the techniques that he's using, it takes, you know, some of the amazement out of it, frankly, because you can start to say, okay, so this is a matter of information control. So then you begin analyzing, you say, okay, this is the information that was controllable. This was the information that wasn't controllable. And so therefore there had to be an injection of information at this point in order to be able to make this turn out the way he was hoping that it would turn out. And so where is that injection of information after the future is already known? And so it's interesting from that viewpoint to kind of examine the shows and those things. But in addition to doing those types of shows, he does shows that are typically just specifically about certain mental processes. So the show that I was watching that I wasn't sure I was going to watch was really about that, about this mental process. And it was actually a two-parter. And the first parter was a study on placebos that they had done, where they took all these groups of people and they divided them up.
Excuse me.
And they were looking for people who had allergies, they were looking for people who wanted to be smarter, they were looking for people who had some kind of fear in their life. And they went into this large office building that was empty and decorated just enough of it to make it look like a successful drug company. And then they marched these people through this successful drug company, and they had the guy in the white lab coat who was telling them how that this Ramiadin or something, I forget what it was called, you know, could take away fear. And they gave them these blue pills, and they were saying that if they wanted a calming effect, they used a blue pill, and if they wanted a exciting effect, they used a red pill. And so they gave them these pills and told them they had to take them 4 times a day. And the reason they told them 4 times a day was because the placebo effect apparently works better if you tell people that they have to take these pills 4 times a day. And so it was very interesting. And in fact, there were some great results with this placebo effect. And so the conclusion is that then all these things that these people are able to accomplish when they're taking these pills, they could have those same results just in their own minds doing it for themselves. Which led to part two of this series called Fear and Faith. And part two of this series of Fear and Faith was Darren Brown making the assertion that God may be the biggest placebo as well. And his assertion is that if believing in God makes you happy, then that's fine. Believe in God. But there's no need to clog it up with a lot of other things like trying to prove that God exists and all that kind of stuff. You should just be willing to say, I make myself happy through this idea of God. And that's all there is to it. There's all the feelings I'm experiencing, all the things, the coincidences I'm experiencing in my life, the way God works things out. It's all just because I'm making it happen and I'm attributing it to God. And that's fine if that makes me happy, but just because things are working out for me, it doesn't, you know, prove anything. Okay, you know, that's fine. I'll be the first to admit that if you're really going to try to pin me down, I'm going to tell you, look, ultimately I have no idea whether there is something or whether there is nothing. We are all dealing with this question. But as I said last week, it doesn't even matter if it's not true. Good things come out of it, which I think in a way is Darren Brown's position as well. If you're the type of person who can believe in God and that makes you happy and you're comfortable with the fact that that may be false, but it still makes you happy and makes your life better, then great, go ahead, believe in God. What he's against is people exploiting that belief in people to get money or to cause them to do things they wouldn't normally do or to make them feel guilty for not doing things they should do, you know, all that kind of stuff. He doesn't like all the mechanics that go along with organized religion, which I understand that, and we might get back to talk about that in a few minutes. But specifically, in his effort to question whether or not God is the ultimate placebo, he had several different things that they did in the show, which he felt like, I'm sure, added up to fairly incontrovertible proof that, in fact, that everything we feel when we think about God is simply manufactured by ourselves and nothing of it actually proves there is a God. Okay, well, maybe. Although I did notice a couple of little discrepancies that we'll talk about where I went, oh, okay, wait a minute. But that's simply because I do believe in God, and so I'm sensitized to those discrepancies. Whereas someone who is trying hard not to believe in God might just gloss over them or say, well, no, it's all the same thing. It's not really a discrepancy. You just think it's a discrepancy. So that's fine. That's fine. Here's basically the stuff that he went through. The first thing is that he absolutely admitted that all of us are born with an inbuilt tendency to believe in something beyond ourselves. I mean, he just absolutely came out and said, yes, we are all born with an innate, inbuilt tendency to believe in more than ourselves, which I thought that was interesting. Now, he would attribute that to something that happened along the evolutionary way, which is fine. That's fine. So he said, you can actually take atheists and you can prove this, that we're all born with this inbuilt tendency to believe in the supernatural. He took him, four atheists, and he took him to this church and took him down to the basement of this church where there was this crypt, this pitch black, And he just mentioned in passing that some people say it's haunted, but, and then he put them in there one at a time with an infrared camera to kind of watch their reactions. And of course, three out of the four start hearing voices, they start seeing things because they're sensory deprived and their senses are trying to do something. But the final gal just kind of sat in there and thought that it was fairly comfortable and she enjoyed being there. And, you know, she really didn't hear anything or see anything. And so then he focused on her, because in his mind, what you've got now is someone who is an atheist, who is very comfortable in being an atheist and does not necessarily immediately jump to a supernatural conversion. And what he was going to do is, by having a 15-minute conversation with her, he was going to give her a religious conversion experience without ever mentioning God. Okay, so that's what he set himself to do. And by doing this, what he was going to prove is that everything that she was feeling was caused by his setups, and her responses to those setups had nothing to do with God. Okay, that's fine. You know, all right. That's fine. So anyways, he set that aside then, and then he started going through some other interesting things. They had this buzzer test where it has this wire or this copper tubing that's bent, and then you take this little ring around that and you have to run it over this copper tubing without it hitting the sides. And if you do, a buzzer buzzes. And they took two groups of people. And the first group of people, they had each of them come in separately and try to do this, and then they said, and every time you hit a buzz, hit the side and it buzzes, then just hit this button over here to say, yeah, you know, I hit the side, so we can keep track of it. They started off with an observer, and then they had the observer leave. And sure enough, three out of the four people who did it that way cheated. You know, the buzz, 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 buzz. Okay, now I'll do a count. Buzz, 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 count. Okay, now I'll hit the button to do the count. They did exactly the same thing with a second group of people, and apparently these people were all atheists as well. Exactly the same thing. The only difference was is they had a chair in the room for the second group of people that had a sign on it, and the sign was something like Antiques Ghost Show. And before the person left the room, they told the people, yeah, and this chair, it's for the Antiques Ghost Show. And apparently, some people say this chair is haunted, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. And then he just left the room. Just the fact that there was a chair in the room that might be haunted, even though they didn't believe in the supernatural, meant that all the people in the second group didn't cheat. Which is really interesting and does document the fact that people will act in a moral way if they think someone else is watching. And then he went into the reason, supposedly, that this happens. The people who originally conducted the experiment, this was their reason that it was likely that this happened. They said, okay, well, really what happened was, once we developed language, then that meant that people could gossip about you and ruin your reputation and potentially put you in danger, because then you would have to leave the group and you might not be able to reproduce and you might not be able to get as much food. So you had a benefit for staying in the group, but the only way you could stay in the group is if everybody thought nicely and kindly about you. And so then we developed this fear of people watching us. And so then that kept us behaving morally. And the safest way to ensure that people would have this moral behavior is if we somehow spontaneously just adopted this idea of a God. We extrapolated from the fact that we have moral behavior when someone else is watching us, so therefore maybe there's an all-seeing eye, and so then we started moving that direction, so that's where God came from, because that was a presence that could be around even when our peers weren't, and therefore moderate behavior starts being hardwired into our brains. Oh, Okay, well, that's fine. There does seem to me to be a few holes in that. And that is, I don't see any reason why moderate behavior would necessarily cause you to be more successful evolutionarily, if that's a word. Because it seems to me like being selfish, more selfishly motivated, and going out and conquering the tribes that are next to you, or killing the guy next to you and taking his wife, it seems like selfish behavior has been and always could be something that might be a very successful adaptation in life. Now, there may be other studies that I don't know about that show that being moderately behaved and being nice in a group of people is actually better in the long run. But in the short day-to-day stuff, there's a whole lot of people in this world that approach life from the perspective of, I'm watching out for me first. And if it was really true that the most successful people were the ones who limited their selfish behavior, why do we still have so many people who are consistently working to just get whatever they can alone and run roughshod over a lot of the other people? So that's just an aside. I'm not convinced that from a purely evolutionary standpoint that giving self-sacrificing behavior is necessarily the best way to ensure the propagation of your genes. But anyways. So then he did some other experiments where he showed the power of belief. Like, he told these people, okay, this is peppermint, really strong peppermint. I'm going to take the top off it. And as we go around the room, I want people to raise their hand when you smell the peppermint, because you'll be amazed that, in fact, the peppermint doesn't spread throughout the room like you think it was. So he takes the cap off it. And I'm exercising while I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, there is no peppermint smell. So people start popcorning up with their hands all over the room. And then he eventually tells them, no, there's no peppermint smell. But it was only caused because there was this deep 18 hertz tone that we played. And that tone was what caused you to smell peppermint. So then he told everybody at home, now everybody at home, we're going to try an experiment with you. So close the windows and, you know, just focus on the TV. And when you see the picture of peppermint, we're going to play this tone and see if you can smell the peppermint just from hearing this tone. And they play it, and it's dead silent. There is nothing going on. I'm like, there is no tone. Now, you know, I understand that 18 hertz is actually low enough that, A, I'm not sure the speakers in my little headphones could even reproduce it to begin with. And I think 20 hertz is the threshold for human awareness. So, you know, there's some things working against that. But then he does come out and admit, I'm getting my mail. He comes out and admits, yeah, there was no tone. But if you smelled peppermint, we'd like to hear from you. Because that would be interesting. See if you actually smelled it when there was no tone and, you know, all you did were looking at a picture. It is gorgeous outside today. It's like 50 degrees. It is beautiful. It has been so long since we've had this kind of lovely, oh, it's good. It's good. It's good. Anyway. So, he also talked about this show that he said that he was going to put together called Intervention, where he took this gal and he interviewed her, and they set up this one thing where he said, would you be surprised to learn that I can spill your water? And then they had this whole cascading series of, this guy trips over that, knocks a ladder over that dumps this, and made this other guy trip and spills her water. And he says, now these type of things, you know, we're going to have people, you're not going to see them, you're not going to see the cameras, but we're going to have people that are going to be doing this to you over the next couple of weeks. And we just want to see if you can figure out what's us and what's not us, and you're going to keep a video diary of it. Of course, there were no people. Backing into my garage, so I'm going to talk louder. There were no people, and so basically she just took the random events in her life and she made order out of them by just saying, oh, that might be this and this might be that and blah, 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 blah. which of course we do as well. You know, as a programmer in IT, one of the easiest things in the world to do is, if two things go wrong on the same evening, is to assume they're somehow related. Because thankfully, things don't go wrong that much in the IT stuff that I've worked on. And so if two things happen on the same evening, obviously they're related. And yet there has been several times when, more than once, let's put it that way, more than once, when in fact they were not related. They were completely unrelated. But you don't know that till you just get down and you just debug it. So anyways, so after going through all this, then he actually, well, along the way, actually, he was working with this young lady and they were playing clips of it. And so what he basically did is he brought this young lady that he was going to give a religious experience to, and he brought her to a church. Okay, so he said he's not going to mention God, but they're sitting in a church. So, you know, that was a little bit of sleight of hand, because obviously she's going to be thinking about God if she's sitting in a church. But he said he basically was going to do a couple of different things. First of all, he was going to elicit feelings in her about her father and then amplify those into a perfect father figure. So he asked her, so how's your relationship with your dad? Oh, she's super, it's great. You know, he's my hero. And she said, you know, he wasn't perfect growing up. And so then he was talking to her about, well, what would you feel like if you imagined a father who didn't have to go to work, who just spent every minute with you and was very attentive to you and just told you how much he loved you? And, oh, so that was being, you know, she thought about that and you'd kind of see her eyes glazing over. And then he started tapping the table because he was tying that feeling to the tapping. And then he started talking to her about the fact that of her events in her life and how that things that looked bad initially really worked out for her good, and kind of started giving her this idea that there's been this master plan. And then as she was thinking about that, he was tapping to kind of marry this idea of a kind, loving father with this master plan, you know, tapping the table, tapping the table. And then he gave her permission indirectly to have faith in something, you know, because he talked about how faith can be a positive thing in our lives. And of course, he's an authority figure to her because everyone, you know, is kind of in awe of Darren Brown. And so she's listening to all this and he's using hand motions to say, and sometimes, you know, we can just take all these things and meld them together and do this. And he said, you know, and then they just present themselves to us, and he puts his hand in front of her. And so he goes through all this, talks to her for about 15 minutes. And then he says, listen, he said, I need to go check on something, but I'll be right back. He said, if, you know, and then later he said, you know, if you want to stretch your legs and that kind of stuff. So this gal steps up, and in Darren's terminology, he's placed in her mind and in her subconscious, he's placed all these feelings. He's made her think about her life. He's talked to her about merging those together and how that faith can be a good thing. And then he's visually placed directly in front of her all those feelings by motioning with his hand. And so she's sitting there by herself, and she's staring up at the stained glass windows. Okay, he didn't talk about God, but she's in a church. Staring up at the stained glass windows. And you can tell she's starting to get moved. And she stands up, and she just breaks down and starts sobbing. I mean, sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And then afterwards, you can hear her whisper, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And then she sits down and she's sobbing and she whispers, thank you. And so Darren comes back in and he says, are you okay? Are you all right? And she says, yeah, I'm fine, she said. And so then he starts talking to her about, you know, what happened. And then at the end of this show with studio audience, he brings her out. And again, they start talking about what happened. And then he goes through all the steps that he went through to lead her to that point. And he keeps telling her, I just want to make sure that, you know, you don't come away from this with feeling like you have to adopt a religious belief because I'm the one that did this and you did it. You know, I said, I set it up, but those feelings that you had came from within you. Those were all just you based on the stimulations that I was giving you. Because at one point she would say, this has got to be something supernatural. And so you could tell she was a little kind of crestfallen. She said, well, okay, so I guess every feeling that I have is triggered by something, and so they're all kind of artificial in a way, so it's okay. And he said, yeah, and you should cherish that you had that experience, and that doesn't take away from the experience you had just because, you know, it was instigated by me, but I just don't want you adopting any supernatural belief simply because of that experience, because that was all you. It was all you. Okay. You know, maybe. It may be. But what was interesting to me about this was how she described this experience. Because in several of the examples leading up to this, in the ghost chair where people were cheating, with the people who were sitting in the crypt and going, oh, there's something over there, oh, there's something over there. In the smelling of the sensations, maybe not so much in that. But when I think about people wanting to have this overarching God idea that's there, and even in the evolutionary description about, you know, God, and that's going to keep you on the straight and narrow, and that's a better survival technique, it's really more about instilling fear into people. If you don't do this, something bad's going to happen to you. And it is that fear that organized religion often exploits that drives people to modify their behavior, to attend a certain church, to act in a certain way when they're in that church, to act in a certain way during the week. But when this young lady started talking about the experience she had, and the experience that Darren led her into for her to have a religious experience, it was not fear-based. The experience that he led her into was an experience of love, of thinking about how someone cherishes you, of thinking about how they've taken care of you. And in fact, when she described it, she said, you know, why couldn't I have had this all along? She said, and he said, well, what are you feeling? And she said, well, it's like the love I have for my family, but it's like 1,000 times greater than that. In other words, she connected with something, and what she got from that something, what she said was full, unconditional love. And this is what was interesting to me about that, that it wasn't condemnation. And when she was saying, I'm sorry, what she was really meaning is, I'm sorry I didn't realize how much you loved me. And when she was saying thank you, she wasn't saying thank you for putting me on the straight and narrow. She was saying thank you for feeling, allowing me to feel that love from you. And it may very well be that, in fact, Darren Brown was the one that elicited, you know, set her up, and she just experienced all these things simply from within herself, you know. Or there might be another explanation. And the other explanation is that God, who lives deep within our hearts, who is communicating with us at a very profound and fundamental level, trying to communicate with us every day, will take any opportunity to express his love for us. And if we just crack open that door, that he will fill us, that he will wrap his arms around us, and cause us to have this profound emotional experience. Now, some people might be uncomfortable with that, because they would say, well, it's really easy to be led astray. It is, but where we get led astray, in my mind, typically is when people are trying to promote negative emotions. You know, if you don't give me this money, you're not going to be healed. You know, if you don't pay your tithe, you know, God's going to strike you down. If you don't do this, God's going to be angry. Those are the things that force us into behavior. You know, if you don't do this, we're going to excommunicate you from the cult. But this idea of this communication of a profound, unconditional love, it doesn't seem to me like there's a whole lot of side effects with that. And I just wonder that God isn't looking for any opportunity to visit people. And he will even use an entire program that's dedicated to attempting to convince people that he is but a placebo if it means that he's going to have an opportunity to reach out and touch someone. And I would guess, no way to prove this, but I would guess that young lady, because you could see her crestfallen when Darren Brown told her that he had done it all and there was nothing supernatural about it. You could see how she was just really struggling with that idea. And I'm wondering if, whether she's willing to admit it to anyone else or not, that as she walks through her life now, having had that experience, if she doesn't look back on it and say, you know, there was something incomprehensible about that. There was something more beyond myself. It wasn't that I manufactured all that. I may have opened the door. I may have remembered some of those feelings, but there was also someone behind that who took that opportunity because he loves me and he wanted me to do it, that he was willing to step through that opportunity and show that to me. You know, it's very interesting, the ideas that we have about what God is willing to do to reach people. But it's well within my God's mode of operation to take that moment, even though it's created by an atheist, to take that moment to touch a person. Because once you have one of those profound experiences, it's really pretty difficult just to walk away from that and say, well, I just did that all myself, because it feels so different. And either that is the depth of the way we deceive ourselves, or in fact, there is something rather than nothing. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.